In fact, only 5 minutes left before the lunch break, but let's, with your agreement, rob a few minutes from the lunch break without sacrificing the afternoon session that starts at 1:30 sharp, particularly because we have this teleconference with Bryn Mawr colleagues, with Paul Grobstein, who'll be talking about the brain and the scientific mind. So you will want to attend it. He is a neurobiologist, interesting ideas that you may want to share with him. May I invite the representative of the group that produced this monumental work here to give a brief explanation to the others, and perhaps while we may have some time here to discuss. The lunch break itself, obviously, is an excellent opportunity to start interacting, not in your own group, but mixed with the members of the other groups, and try to come to a more comprehensive view of what this is all about, the scientific mind. So this group, please, who will do the talking?
Oh, we have a team.
It's not a minimalistic concept, this I guess we all understand.
Marty, you may want to introduce yourself to the...
I am Martin de Vries. I'm Dutch and American by passport and birth. And I had the pleasure of meeting Jan some time ago in this concept. I've been involved in psychiatry, media, and anthropology, and we've all come from different levels. The final definition is, what is this really? Why are we using such a word like scientific mind? And the process was started by Rihanna. You want to say something about how we started and how we came to this?
Well, first of all, we just brainstormed. People shouted out ideas, and we listed them. Then we started talking about how we might categorize them. We decided that paper was too small, so we made it as big as we could. We were still frustrated by the lack of color and three dimensions. But we did the best we could. It's a very much a work in progress. We didn't have consensus, but we had a lively exchange of ideas, which I think is maybe more important. Really near the end, we started to ask this question. Is it valid to even talk about such a thing as a scientific mind? And if so, what does that mean? And so that's really where we stopped. It seems like stopping at the beginning.
Yeah, just to say it's deeply embedded in that self. So the self that surrounds the scientific mind, we were very aware of. And whatever that, with everything that it encompasses, being the body and the mind, feelings, all of those things that go with it. And there was quite a bit of talk around what we're calling assumptions and values. Assumptions of it being better, of it being good. Whether it's something that's Western, how this relates to power and politics, how it relates to roles of universities. This whole thing of something being valued, and is that correct? So we went a little bit into that as well. And looking at some of the things of culture, gender, language, history, poverty, government, those kind of things. So we were getting into that kind of discussion as well.
Yeah, and we had the concrete elements of organization and society and culture, which I guess many of you also, and then the processes of thinking from creativity to methods, all impinging on the self and this concept of mind, which we thought should come out like a volcano or a hologram, some kind of three-dimensional presentation. On this background of context, and Lynn and Leon's idea of noise, that the constant tension between organization and disorganization in the background, and the social, cultural, governmental context that give birth to that. So the thing is that what we came up with, that the what is this issue, the assumptions and values, the products that come out, and also the introduction of your idea that the products obviously that come out of this are also negative. They're not just positive, but all the bad and good at the same time, and good and evil play in this realm. If we had five dimensions, we could bring that in, and that's a very interesting set of concepts.
So we had fun.
We had fun. Maybe. It's a story.
So thank you so much, and the floor is open for discussion. Please contribute to this from the perspective of the work that you have been doing. Yes. And while you talk, please introduce yourself briefly, just by name.
Okay, hello, I'm Ronnie Sears. I had a question about why do we surround the scientific mind with only self? It's in my viewpoint with an individualistic viewpoint that only a person has by its him or herself the scientific mind. Personally, I also like the idea that the mind is a kind of a collaborative thing that people contribute to. So my question is why is
the paper isn't big enough. The circle around the kind of our group is as far as I can.
And I would argue that self, depending on your culture, can be more than an individual.
I think that's
very important. So the self should not be just be seen as individual in an individualistic sense, but is also collective. Yeah. Thanks for that observation. Yes.
Cheryl, how did you conceptualize emotion in the scientific mind? Someone mentioned feelings, but I wasn't sure how you were including it.
Well, we ran out of again space, but that's in that self concept. That self had the, if I got it right, just the emotions and the cognitions and the intuitions that are meant to be all of this process of self. What we did was cluster all of those associations that had to do with processes internal to an individual in that self thing, and then the things around it essentially external to it. And then the linkage between them is very important.
Leon.
I was trying to find big subdivisions in which we could put these things, and then there'll be places where we don't know where they don't fit into those. But if you try the simplest subdivision, many of the things we have are outside the brain, like the institutions, and the schools, and the TV, and all of the personal relationships and so on, largely come into the brain from outside. They go through a series of filters, one of which is, can you see, can you smell, can you hear, can you feel, and other maybe more less obvious filters that have to do which live in a region between the input and the brain itself. And I don't know enough neuroscience to know where those belong, but clearly if you're hungry or if you're fearful, that affects the information you get. And does that appear in self, or could we put that into this senses, generalized senses category, where if you're hungry or senses, it's part of your ability to use the senses to receive the information from outside. And then inside, again, we have to, there may be places which would be convenient for us to subdivide. These are the properties of mind, like curiosity, skepticism, preconditions, the religious backgrounds. These are could we separate these into different locations in the mind or near the mind so that we can somehow classify all of those many, many words into locations with as little ambiguity as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that addition. And it seems to play well with what we'll hear this afternoon from Paul Grobstein. So as I did a rather dry run with him on his presentation, I think there are some interesting connections there that you may want to attend to this afternoon. Lawson?
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, I object on building scientific mind. Because you cannot build the mind, you can build the body. Okay, the number of inputs is very limited. I mean, here nutrition, physical, I mean, how you use your body, but to build the mind is impossible. Because the number of inputs there, the mind as a system, it's limited. I mean, look, this is culture, this is religion, this is education, the school, this is media, this is everything. So I think building a mind is not possible. And even if you build a mind, this is once again a territorial system. I mean, we will be typical, we lose diversity. If you'll be thinking the same way I'm doing it, so we lose the diversity. So here we should be careful about using this terminology. I don't have the terminology, I have a problem with the terminology. Because scientific mind means look at the research schools, for example, especially in social science. I'm not social science, but I dealt with everyone, and I like it. They have very strict schools. If you just follow one another school, you are out. I mean, you have to prove, I mean, that you are correct, and it might take centuries. So this, how can we call it? Is it scientific mind? So I have a problem here with the terminology, because what do you mean by scientific mind is not a scientific mind. And you cannot build a scientific mind.
Thank you. Peter?
Well, first of all, I think you can't build a scientific mind. And the modern brain research shows that the brain is a muscle like your body, and actually the analogy works quite well. And how well you exercise it when you're young makes a big difference, how useful it is to you when you grow. But I agree with one thing. I'm very confused by what we mean by the term scientific mind. Are there other kinds of minds? Can we survive without a scientific mind? Is that something that's new to scientific concepts like quantum mechanics, which nobody can understand, even those who claim they do? So I'm a little confused about the definition. Does anybody have a good definition of scientific mind?
One comment.
Let's see, John.
First of all, science is defined as organized knowledge. Another definition was given by Charles Darwin, who said science consists of arranging facts in such a way that general conclusions may be drawn from them. So science really is an organization of our observations of nature, and it's a matter of faith for most scientists that there's causality in the universe, and that as we go deeper in our descriptions of nature, the boundaries between different disciplines become less and less relevant. So mathematics becomes related to physics becomes related to chemistry, to biology, and then ultimately to all the other branches of science. So there is a kind of unity. Whether these things are true or not, one doesn't know. But I think most scientists have those beliefs as a matter of faith.
It's good that the questions are...
Yeah, I think what the human science should be
the same. Also, it is a part of organized knowledge. Therefore, without definition, part of science.
Eric Ross.
I'm still a bit unsure today because I don't think you're quite interested in your profession. I'm an anthropologist. I've done work, for example, with Amazonian Indians. Their way of organizing knowledge conforms to everything you've said about the scientific mind. They've organized knowledge. They in fact, are well ahead of us in the sense that they've not yet fragmented things into separate disciplines to then need to kind of reassemble them into a holistic view. They've got it, and we hope they don't lose it. So it seems to me that what we're left as a kind of residual consideration, if all human beings, I think this goes back to the point, is that we have given a kind of, the terminology of scientific mind has a kind of Eurocentric, late 20th century sense about it, that really turns its back on what I think is a basic evolutionary trait of human beings that got us this far in the first place, is that way of organizing knowledge, of being able to see patterns, sometimes patterns that mislead, okay, but that Stephen Jay Gould has talked a lot about how we sometimes see them when they're not there, for example, constellations. We see patterns, but in fact the stars have no concrete relationship to one another. We also don't see patterns where they do exist. But I think that in general, organizing knowledge and facts into generalizations that have some kind of predictive value has great survival instinct. I don't think the question is whether some groups of people organize knowledge and others don't. It's the institutions and the other forms to which knowledge is organized. And I think that's an area in which we might want to look at non-Western pre-industrial societies to see far more productive ways of organizing knowledge with a kind of social aspect to it, which I think the Western science has lost. That's more of a concern to me, is that our way of organizing knowledge, what we call science, has tended to diverge from the social dimension to emphasize more truly technical, and therefore leading to some very dubious conclusions and kind of generalization. But I think that what we call in science is something we all do. And we need another terminology so we don't use it in a way which gives us in the West or the North or the OECD priority and excludes everybody else from that noble humanity.
Thank you, Eric. We are running into the lunch break already, of course, and I propose we have one more intervention by Vinda, and then we consider that we have enough food for thought already to use our lunch break for the purpose of continuing the discussion while we consume also the other food that we need to sustain our bodies. And build them, and perhaps through the discussion build our minds at the same time. Vimla.
I want to follow up with the last two comments. Basically from very much of my own research in the area and my own thought, that there are that scientists usually think of general laws of behavior, and you look for something very consistent in nature and behavior. So as long as there are human beings everywhere, there's something common among all of us, the way we do things. And that way, we look for that commonality towards a theory which is much more parsimonious, something we can explain towards one theoretical framework, rather than looking for 10,000 different ones in 10,000 different countries. Once you have got that, a knowledge organization is one aspect of it. In other words, do people organize information in a similar way? Is there something common between the way they cluster, the way they do things, the way the kinds of they reason from this knowledge? Then you have to go back and say, what is the other kinds of knowledge and information, the science or the other kinds of mind that people bring in, the culture, the tradition, the language, that can supplement or enhance this model or embellish this model to say, what makes this particular culture different to the other? So there is something more general that we have to study, and this general is the one that comes under the scientific domain. We look for a very logical consistency between the evidence we find and the theory that we try and espouse. At the same time, we look for embellishment to see what makes it a little bit more than scientific. What are the intuitions we bring into play? What are the opportunistic behavior we play because of our own environment and culture? So I think this is where we perhaps the way I view it, and most of my own research and research that people I work with seem to show some of these trends.
Thank you very much. Well, I hope you're aware that we're merely starting an exercise. That's why we did it at the beginning of the 4 days. This is by no means complete, and it will not be complete at the end of the 4 days. This will be a continuing challenge, I think, to clarify the concept. But I'm glad already with the product that we have and with the questions that were raised, which are all very relevant and should be discussed in the context of the other sessions that we're going to have. So I invite you now to go to the atrium, where the lunch is, it's a buffet lunch being served. Use your time the way you please to contribute further to the growth of the scientific mind. And be back here, please, at 1:30, because of the start of the teleconference. Thank you so much.